Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investment alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, how do socially inspired investment themes differ, and why is that important? Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. As socially inspired investing matures and takes its place as part of the investment structure, it's time for some clarification. Not all social investment approaches are the same. It can be very confusing. SRI, ESG, impact investing, SII. So how do investors and advisors too, for that matter, sort it all out? Here with us to talk about that today is Gabe Risman, president and co-founder, along with CEO Patrick Reed of Your Stake, which helps financial advisors take their clients through the process of matching their personal views with their investments. Before Your Stake, Gabe co-founded Real Impact Tracker, which rates the ESG impact of asset managers. He also held positions at Rockefeller & Company and the Connecticut Green Bank. At Yale, Gabe led Yale's fossil fuel divestment movement and the student-run Socially Responsible Investing Fund. Gabe was named 30 Under 30 in Socially Responsible Investing and has published academic papers on ESG investing. Gabe, great to have you with us. Tell us more about Your Stake.
Sure. So I founded Your Stake with my co-founder in 2019. We were both climate activists and data scientists and understood that there's tremendous potential to actually have investors contribute to influencing companies and the way that the economy essentially works. And we found that socially responsible investing, ESG investing, were ways that investors are able to align their investments with their values and see that reflected in what's going on in the world. We found that there was a challenge telling the story and communicating and actually providing a good experience for financial advisors to help their clients get the most out of their investments from a values perspective. And Your Stake is a software tool that helps financial advisors have conversations with their clients and then tell stories around values to their clients and deliver portfolios that align with those values.
Okay. Well, our focus today is how socially inspired investment themes differ and why that's important. We hear all about ESG these days for environmental, social, and governance investing, but we also hear SRI for socially responsible investing. We hear impact investing. Are they all the same or are one or two subsets of the other? What are the differences among them?
Yeah, I love that question. It's probably the most important one for this conversation. What we're seeing right now is a lot of people are using that term ESG to mean anything in this area. If you have values that you care about and you want those reflected in your investments, or you just want to analyze your investments, but I think the field is going to begin moving past that, because in its pure definition, what ESG really means, and as it was intended to be used, is what are the metrics that correlate and relate to financial performance of a company. So for example, if a company is really exposed to the risk of physical climate risk, there's just a major hurricane. Does the company have assets and real estate and property that are exposed to hurricane risk? That's an example of an environmental factor of physical climate risk that is relevant specifically to the companies that are involved from a financial performance standpoint. There's a lot of metrics like that. Regulatory risk, being able to attract the best talent with strong diversity across the company. Those are things that ESG means. And I think it's been used in ways that are different. Now, on the other hand, I think that the term that a lot of people are looking for is values-aligned investing. Mm-hmm. So we oftentimes use the term values-aligned investing to mean really whatever a person cares about. So for example, there are some people that could be very anti-gun. There are some people that could be very pro-gun. And you might want to align your investments either way across really any issue that you care about, regardless of the correlation with particular financial performance. The two terms that we like to use the most are ESG, which is looking at financial performance, values-based investing, which is, hey, just what do I care about the most and what matters to me and how do I align my investments with my moral beliefs and my personal values.
So ESG is actually a risk rating of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to elaborate just a little bit more on that?
I'd say that's fair. I would say that traditionally a lot of ESG factors are looking at risk coming from environmental either regulation or litigation or actual disaster and degradation. And then on the social and governance side, there's a risk to having poor governance practices and having one shareholder with too much control, for example. There's a risk to having poor labor relations and having employees being treated poorly with bad working conditions.
Uh-huh.
So that's the risk side of things. I would also say just thinking of ESG as a risk factor misses out on the opportunity side of things. So there's a lot of potential financial opportunity for companies that are leading ESG innovations and solutions and transformations, where if you're looking at a company that is creating more energy efficiency or providing better products and services in a particular way, that's seeing ESG not just as a risk, but also as an opportunity. But it is, ESG definitely is a rating that is about risk and return evaluations.
Mm-hmm. But that's not really the perception, is it, so much the common perception among investors and advisors too, for that matter?
I think that's correct. And I think the reason why is that ESG was really taking off and a lot of people just wanted to join in on that bandwagon. And I actually think that's where the term greenwashing comes in. So greenwashing is when either companies or fund managers, their marketing essentially outpaces their actual practices. They say they are doing so much, but it's not necessarily backed up by their operations. And there was so much interest in this term ESG, and it was new and it was exciting, that almost everyone wanted to find some way that they could fit into this ESG field and play a part in that game. And then the term ESG just really expanded past its real definition. And I think we're now seeing a pullback in that definition of what ESG is. But you're right, there's a lot of confusion that needs to be cleared up right now.
So greenwashing basically is when, say, a company says that it has shaped its a policy to watch out for the environment, for racial, gender equality issues, social issues, conservation issues, all that kind of thing. But it doesn't necessarily follow up on those policies.
Yes. So I think there's two types of greenwashing.
Okay.
The first type of greenwashing is a company greenwashing. And a lot of times that is a company only highlighting their really positive efforts and not disclosing the full picture. Oh man, we've seen so many things. You can tell that a company is maybe, I'll say, insecure or not confident in its, let's just say, women in management positions or its racial justice. If it only discloses its women in management positions in a particular geography, or it says, of our new hires, this is what percent were racially diverse or something like that. It's not actually giving a comparable number. Right. It's giving a close thing, maybe with a footnote saying just in the US or something like that. And that's something that can be deceiving and not comparable for investors. There's actually another thing, emissions reporting. Sometimes companies will include certain categories of greenhouse gas emissions and other companies will include different categories and they might call it the same thing. So standardization of that is really important. And until then, there's some maybe misperception. So that's not necessarily greenwashing, but it is leading to non-apples to apples comparisons. And then the other type of greenwashing, that's when a fund manager will say, hey, we look at ESG issues, we look at climate risk, we look at racial justice, we look at gender equality, we look at human rights for every company that we evaluate. And it turns out they actually don't do that. And the SEC has actually issued some enforcement action recently around exactly that, where fund managers say they have an ESG process, or they say they look at these issues for every company, or they say that it's an important part of the investment process, but maybe they just have a score and they don't incorporate it so much. So that's what greenwashing is from a fund perspective.
Would you say that ESG-oriented advisors and the community are telling investors what they should care about and more or less dictating the conversation?
That is such a really good and a nuanced question. I think there are kind of three parts to it. Let's start with the furthest answer of no, and then work our way back up. So we work with a lot of advisors, and there are many advisors that take the philosophy of, it doesn't matter what my values are as the advisor, because my job is to serve my clients. So what I need to do is just assess my clients' values and then deliver solutions that are going to be the best fit for them. Now, there are other advisors that say, I, as an advisor, have a particular set of values. Maybe I really care about climate change. Mm-hmm. I mentioned before I was a climate activist, and I am going to advertise myself as being able to deliver on these values. And I'm going to try to attract clients that also align with these same values. So I wouldn't say that's necessarily pushing values on other people, but it's pulling people in that share the values. And then the last thing is, I think unintentionally, a lot of times there are ESG ratings providers that have a particular opinion on a company from an ESG perspective, based on what they're looking at from a financial materiality standpoint. And when people are using those ESG ratings to make decisions about their investments from a value standpoint, then by default, they are using the values of whatever this ratings provider is as their own personal values when they're selecting their investments.
Okay. Well, what should advisors be doing then for their clients who show an interest in ESG investing? How do they get into the nuts and bolts to find out what those investors really care about?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, what you just said right there, Patrick. Advisors really need to lean in to having better conversations with their clients. You can take that conversation from a conversation about performance and risk, which is great, and everyone needs to have that conversation, but to really build a bond and a relationship with your client, as your stake, we do have a tool, actually a couple tools to help advisors have those conversations, but there's a lot of different ways that advisors can get to know their clients. And that's really what we recommend. If someone comes in and says, hey, this type of thing is interesting to me, a lot of times the client doesn't really know what that means. And it's on the advisor to say, all right, so what do you care about? So many different goals that people can have and so many different values they might want to express, that that's really what the advisor needs to do. And then there are solutions out there based on whatever the client cares about, but just figuring out what is important is something that a lot of advisors aren't doing and is what we see the field moving towards.
So there's no one real set formula. I mean, it's not just like you punch all the numbers into a computer or into a program and it spits out what that investor should be doing. It really should be a lot more personal than that.
I think that's true. Once you get to a certain level in the conversation, you can get to a punch in the numbers. But I don't think there's a one size for everyone, but there are many subsets of clients that might fall into the same category, and figuring out where people are is crucial.
What about those levels of the conversation? How do you break that down?
Yeah, so two things there. The first is, level one is figure out what someone cares about. And a lot of times, let's say you have a broad solution. You figure out what someone cares about, you diagnose their portfolio, it's totally not aligned. And then you can show your broad solution in comparison to their existing portfolio. And you can see that on, let's say, the vast majority of issues, there's going to be significant improvement. That's a common outcome that we find, is you might not need to personalize the portfolio, because it's possible that by looking at a broad set of issues in your initial portfolio construction, that portfolio is going to be much better than the client's existing portfolio. And it's a huge improvement. So let's go for that anyway, even if it's not better on every issue.
Right. So significant improvement is the key phrase here.
Perfect, be the enemy of the good, one approach. And then there are other people that, no matter what, I cannot invest in XYZ. Sometimes it's private prison. Sometimes it's companies that do animal testing. Sometimes it's related to their religious faith. Sometimes it's going to be fossil fuel companies. Sometimes it requires a more custom solution if the client is very strict and passionate about a particular issue. But when someone that has a broad set of themes, and they are kind of already, you're finding out what they care about, and it's aligned broadly with the portfolio that you constructed to match a lot of clients, that's something that you can just show what the improvement will look like already.
We're talking with Gabe Risman, president and co-founder of Your Stake. So going with that message, perfection is the enemy of good, the advisor should tell the client up front, and the client should realize and agree that they can find a portfolio solution that will be a significant improvement, but it won't be perfect.
Yeah.
Well, that does dovetail with the SEC's concern that some firms, while helping a client align a portfolio more closely with his or her views, are to some extent allowing this misperception that ESG itself represents perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there are still a lot of advisors out there who think that ESG is not a good strategy for investors?
Yes. And it's really funny. So there are a number of surveys, Schwab has a survey, Morgan Stanley did a survey, showing between 80 and 90% of investors wanting to align their investments with their values. Hmm. Advisors are far behind that. A lot of times investors are pushing their advisors to take first steps in this direction. And advisors are resistant. And that's why it can be really powerful when an advisor has this conversation with the client. That's our mission at Your Stake, is to close that gap. So right now, according to the CFA Institute, only 10% of investors are actually aligning their investments with their values versus the 80 to 90% that want to do it. So that's why we provide tools for advisors.
What about the risk and return aspect of all of this? Is there still a lot of concern that this type of sustainable investing is too big a risk? Is the concern among advisors and investors alike?
I think recently that concern is not as prominent. Surveys last year by a number of huge firms have showed that people are now actually either equally or more concerned about the quality of the data, or they want to make sure they're actually aligning their investments with their values. That has become a bigger concern than financial performance among investors. But certainly it's always going to be a concern. That's the primary job of the financial advisor. But there's a lot of evidence showing that you can accomplish those goals and overcome those concerns through this type of investment analysis framework.
What about SEC regulations and other guidelines that can help advisors and investors both? Is more of that coming?
Yes, the SEC last year in 2021 issued a risk alert saying, hey, let's define greenwashing. Greenwashing being making claims that aren't necessarily substantiated in marketing materials. And the SEC found evidence that there was greenwashing going on among fund managers. And this year they put out a set of proposed rules. Those proposed rules were around how fund managers can label themselves, how they can classify themselves, what they need to disclose to be able to back up their claims. And the SEC is going to finalize those rules soon. And that is something that I believe will really help investors, will really help advisors, and will also really help data providers, because a big challenge is standardized disclosures of information. And I think actually where a lot of the field is moving is in the direction of the European Union regulations. It's really amazing, actually. In the European Union, as of August 2nd of 2022, every single financial advisor needs to assess the sustainability of each one of their clients and then find a portfolio that is suitable to that client and then report on how that portfolio is a good fit for that client based on their values and their risk tolerance. We see a lot of parallels in the SEC regulation, and we see the field kind of moving in that direction because it's just a really good client experience to deliver a portfolio that aligns with someone's values, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you said earlier that a lot of advisors are not advising sustainable investing so much, or they're slow to come around to that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Is there a general pushback, even outside of the investment world, against this type of investment? Do we see, whether it's political, whatever it happens to be, is there a pushback against sustainable investing?
There is. Recently, there was actually, as you are probably aware of, state pensions. There are state attorneys general. There are a lot of politicians that are now pushing back against this a lot of times from a political perspective. And my opinion is actually that this is a speed bump, and that what they're pushing back against in reality is essentially greenwashing.
I see.
Because there is a lot of academic research and a lot of empirical evidence that looking at environmental, social, and governance factors leads to stronger risk return analysis. And a lot of times the claims that these people from outside of the investment industry are making is, hey, let's not focus on ESG, let's just focus on risk and return. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make so much sense, right? Because the pure definition of ESG is, hey, there's more things that we need to think about from a risk and return perspective. Okay. So it seems like there's a misinterpretation, maybe willful, maybe not. And I think what they're pushing back against is more of everyone saying that they have an ESG solution and sometimes going ESG light or not really putting in the resources and making claims that aren't always fully substantiated or aren't reflected in the holdings or the processes of the funds. That kind of causes confusion and expands the surface area of attack, essentially, for what's going on. So I think what the pushback is against is not the core of ESG. What the pushback is against is how it's been miscommunicated or how it's been used essentially, instead of what it actually is.
Well, it seems overall like we're still a bit in the Wild West phase of sustainable investing, ESG. Mm-hmm. What do you think lies ahead?
Yeah, Wild West is a pretty fair analogy. I'd say speed bump because I think it's pretty similar. But I think it's pretty clear to me that it's going to continue to gain a lot more attention and acceptance for two primary reasons. The first is, like I mentioned, there's empirical evidence showing that looking at ESG factors is just good for risk and returns. And if you want to be a good investor, you should consider all the factors that are relevant to risk and returns. The second thing is that I don't think people will stop caring about their values anytime soon either, that more and more people are incorporating their values into their lives, into their purchasing decisions, into their employment decisions, and into their investment decisions. So I don't see that trend stopping as more information becomes available and more tools become available and more opportunities become available. So I think we're going to continue going in the positive direction there.
Well, that's a good point and pretty optimistic.
Thank you.
I assume that advisors and investors alike can find out more about you and your stake on your website. I understand you've just revamped your website. Is that right?
We did just revamp the website. Correct. We're really proud of Jack on our team, in case you're listening.
But they have all more information there that they can find.
Yes. And right now, Your Stake really is a solution for advisors. First, I'll start with the individual investors. Here's my theory of change for this whole thing and how I got it started. We found that there's a rule of three or four. And if I can end with this, this is probably the most important thing. It takes three or four investors asking their financial advisor about values-based investing for the advisor to try to find a solution. Right. Three or four out of oftentimes 100. Right? Very small. And it takes three or four advisors talking to fund managers or asset managers or companies about their ESG policies to get them to make a change. So I am very pro the theory of change of just ask. If you're an investor and you care about this, either ask your advisor. And if they're not receptive to that, that means that they are falling behind, and find someone that is receptive to that, because there are advisors that can serve this and there are some that will resist, but you don't need to accept that as the norm. For advisors, we as Your Stake are really focused on helping you essentially lead your clients through the full journey of sustainable investing, figuring out what they care about, diagnosing their portfolio, helping them find a better portfolio, and then reporting on, hey, here's how we can help you better align your portfolio based on our solution.
Hey, Gabe, that's great. A lot of great information you've given us today. Really appreciate your being here. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Patrick. I really appreciated your questions and this was a great conversation.
We've been talking with Gabe Risman, president and co-founder of Your Stake, which helps financial advisors take their clients through the process of matching their personal views with their investments. That website, by the way, is YourStake, YourStake.org. Earlier, Gabe mentioned that there is empirical evidence that socially responsible investing portfolios, on average, achieve comparable or better returns than those using a more traditional strategy. There are certainly studies that support that, and some that challenge that theory. Perhaps it's too soon to make a broad statement about returns. Still, the goal is not sacrificing returns. You can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast, there's no fee, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.